Violence per se has never been my bag, except personally. But in pictures, as in, I would like to try to at least portray it on the screen as it is. I failed, and I've succeeded. But of all those pictures you talk about, basically are morality plays. I've broken a lot of fences and noses. I just do the best kind of a job I know how. But there are certain people who are filmmakers, and there are certain people who are not, that's all.
For 3 years and 100-plus episodes, you've laughed with him, you've cried with him, you've wondered what the fuck his problem is with Steven Spielberg, Wes Anderson, Tom Hanks, and a host of other brilliant film artists. Today, on this episode of The Good, the Pod, and the Ugly, we bid a fair adieu to Jack.
That's French for something.
It's the show, The Good, the Pod, and the Ugly.
Yay! For the final time, possibly ever, if my plane goes down, or if I, you know, Paris is kind of in ruins right now, it's your host, Jack. Your main host.
Yeah, and I'm Ken.
And I am Thomas.
Yeah.
Je m'appelle Jacques, maybe I should say.
I don't know what that means. Who's Jacques?
Isn't that French for Jack?
Aren't you going to Paris to defend the king?
Yeah, he's taking an airship over there, in fact.
I think so.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
This is season nine.
Nine.
This is our season premiere. And
nine, that's German for no.
It is. We're doing 4x4 again. It's four films by four directors, two parts each.
That's
and we are
story.
Having special guests pick the director and films. And we are now on Paul W.S. Anderson, which was picked by frequent guest Annabelle.
And sometimes sibling.
Annabelle is not here to talk about these films, but
Ooh. We
went through watching them anyway, just because we're sticklers for the rules, just like John Wick.
He broke the rules. That's the whole point of the movies. So he's on the run.
Oh, we are sticklers for the rules, unlike John Wick.
Nice.
Yes.
We're conducting business on continental grounds.
Hey, John, all of our pets are alive.
Needlessly mean.
Jonathan's not going to be happy about that.
Jonathan.
So Paul W.S. Anderson, last week we talked about Mortal Kombat and Event Horizon.
And this week, which is a completely different week.
We are going to move further in his career, actually, than the last, this century, and talk about two more consecutive movies, The Three Musketeers and Resident Evil Reparations. Retribution, the second of his three-part finale of the franchise he began in 2002. And Resident Evil was really the first film he made after being in director jail after the 1-2 financial disaster of Event Horizon and Soldier. He was in director jail for about 4 years, and then he said, "Oh, I guess I got to make another video game adaptation like Mortal Kombat." And
my understanding is that he was playing the video game, and he was like, "Man, this would be a good movie," and decided to write a movie, pitch it to the video game distributor producers for Resident Evil, and said, "I'm going to make the movie either way. It could either be a Resident Evil movie, or it could be my own George Romero-esque zombie movie." And they did.
So if you are a screenwriter out there, it's as easy as that to get
blackmail
get
a studio.
Made. Yes.
Yeah. What you want to do is you want to go to Mars and Company and say, you have a Snickers? No, you have a Milky Way? No, you have the Three Musketeers. I'm going to make a fucking film about it.
Uh-huh.
You can either get behind it or not.
And Resident Evil would kind of define his career for, what, the next 15 years? Because he produced all six, wrote all six, or co-wrote, and then directed four out of six. So a big chunk of his legacy is going to be tied to these two movies. But before he made Resident Evil Retribution, he made The Three Musketeers in 2011. Which is a bit of anomaly in his overall filmography because it's not based on a video game. It's not a remake. Well, it's kind of. It has nothing to do with the other versions. Well, sure, maybe the Kiefer Sutherland version? I don't know.
There definitely are three musketeers in it, I guess.
Uh-huh.
In the D'Artagnan?
Uh-huh. What else was going on in 2011 when this movie came out, Thomas? Did any of our other people have anything
out? There was a phenomenal movie that Jack, one day, if he survives Europe, will inherit a DVD of called War Horse.
Not responding.
He needs more coasters. It's true.
Though we didn't cover any of these in our last 4x4 series, also picked by Akural, this director. There were four Bowl films that came out in 2011, including
Name of the King 2.
Four?
Yeah. And the Name of the King 2, Blubberella, and there was like Auschwitz or something terrible, and another film. And he wrote
Blubberella, famously a frame-for-frame remake of a Blood Rain movie.
That's right. Also a video game movie.
Sorry, Thomas.
No, also this year, phenomenal movie, Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance,
woo-hoo!
Which stars Nicolas Cage and
Peter Fonda.
There would also be a, definitely Peter Fonda as a motorcycle rider.
Or was he in the first one?
He was in the first one. Lambert was in the second one, along with Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Great
movie.
Great cast.
2011 also brought us J. Edgar, and it also brought us The Iron Lady.
Wow, Oscar-winning Iron Lady.
I want to talk about it.
Of all of those, I watched Iron Lady in the theater. And this is my first watching of The Three Musketeers, the 2011 version.
It's me! Are you talking about me again?
You know, I can silence this in post-production so easily.
Yeah, Margaret Thatcher, we're done with you. You can go back to your room with the queen.
None of this is making the episode. I hate this bit so much. Thomas, this is your first viewing of Three Musketeers.
It came highly recommended to me two Mardi Gras ago by a young man by the name of Jack Curl, who said it is like the Three Musketeers if they listened to Nirvana or something. I couldn't remember the exact quote.
It was, it's like the Three Musketeers filtered through the Nirvana scene in the new Peter Pan live action movie, where they're on an airship and they're all singing, what the fuck smells
here
like
we
Team
are
Spirit?
Now.
And they're all wearing leather. Yeah. Ken?
Yes?
Viewings? First viewing?
This is my second viewing. The first time I watch it, my daughter Annabelle, who made us watch all four of these movies, who is not here right now. She's in, or they're in Italy.
She is still alive though.
But Jack and Annabelle, this was like their movie to watch together, and they could quote it. So I watched it, and the first time I saw it, I was like, wow, this is really terrible. And then something weird happened this morning when I was rewatching it and working on the Paul W.S. Anderson quiz I found it really appealing. It was like really.
Did you smell toast at the time?
It was like that. After watching these other WS movies, I mean, the cast in this movie is the best cast of any movie he has ever made.
Yeah.
It is fucking great. And it is so fucking stupid. Almost every scene, but he likes sets. There are practical sets as much as possible. There's practical action. And I really appreciate that compared to the next movie we're going to talk about. And I think I'm further removed from this movie that I now know that the main character is Tom Wabaugh, or whatever his name is, from Succession, as one of the main musketeers.
That's right, as Athos.
And he's fucking great. He's hilarious in this movie. everybody is when they're playing it straight. It's only when the movie tries to be funny that it falls into WS
James traps. Corden!
That it falls into WS traps of being terrible.
Yeah, so I'm not sure actually how I first found this movie. I don't remember. I know that Annabelle and I, we used to, you know, like just watching bad movies and making fun of them or having them on in the background while we talk or play cards or do something, you know. We found this film somehow, and when I watched it for the first time, there was like a very distinct moment in the opening, which is terrible, and I was just like, oh, this is going to be a bad movie that will turn off in 20 minutes. But like, I think it's the point when Til Schweiger, who you might know as either, you know him one of two ways, either you know him as Germany's worst actor, or you know him from Inglourious Bastards, when he shows up, I like lean forward, I was like, wait, this is actually getting interesting. And then from then on, it was like something clicked, and we just watched the whole movie like seriously and paid attention to it. And ever since, it's been our go-to movie to put on. Like if we will like plan out a night and be like, yeah, we're going to watch Three Musketeers tonight. That's what we're going to do. And so I've seen it probably 5 or 6 times. I really do unironically think it is one of the best films of the entire 21st century and of the digital era of filmmaking. I think it's completely transcendent.
So the cast, I mean, it's got Matthew McFadden, Ray Stevenson, Juno Temple, Orlando Bloom, Christoph Waltz, for crying out loud, Mads Mikkelsen as like a subordinate villain character. I guess his quote wasn't as high in 2011 as it is today.
Pre-Hannibal.
Yeah, fabulous cast. And also Mila Jovovich, Logan Lerman, and Orlando Bloom. Orlando Bloom's actually pretty funny as the pompadoured villain. Every time he comes on screen, he just looks like a terrible rockabilly character from the mid-80s.
And interestingly enough, out of all those people you named, how many of them are French?
Zero. And Mila Jovovich, but she's Ukrainian, Russian, American citizen. Very complicated Thanksgivings with the WS family. Very weird international cast. Almost like one of those movies that's a tax dodge and all these multinational...
Well, it kind of was, according to the Wikipedia. This was funded by, like, the Bavarian Bank and the German Art Institute or something. Like, weird. Like, it seems like an Uwe Boll level of production where there's someone getting away with something there.
Yeah.
Which is maybe the only reason the movie got made.
For your bingo card, actors got injured because they were using real swords.
Oh, my God.
Fair.
Mila Jovovich.
Yes.
Yes.
In both of these,
bingo.
Right?
Yeah.
Bad CGI?
Yeah, I'm going to call it.
Yeah.
A flying vehicle? Many flying vehicles. This is like the Unforgiven of flying vehicle movies, both of these. It's slow motion. Slow motion. Lots of front and back flips shot from above in that heist scene in Three Musketeers. Mila Jovovich.
Yeah.
Surprising cast. Yeah, Three Musketeers is just crazy stacked. Some sort of fetishistic focus on technology. Definitely with the clock punk stuff and the digital stuff in Resident Evil. Is there a bad dream, though, in either of these? Besides the whole movie feeling like a bad dream.
Yeah, that Resident Evil movie. There's a bad dream. It kind of opens with a memory that's kind of a dream. Remember when she looks like Taylor Swift and she has the deaf daughter?
That's right. Yeah, that counts. And dialogue that sounds like it was written by someone who has never talked to another human.
100%. Ding, 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 ding.
That is blackout Paul W.S. bingo right there.
That's right.
Thanks for playing along. You can burn your cards now.
Or they could burn up in a really bad CGI flame effect.
Yeah, so this to me is like the pinnacle of a movie that should never have been made. That no one asked for, that didn't need to be made, but somehow it was, and somehow a ton of money was put into it, but it doesn't, you look like it on the screen. Somehow it has an insane cast, complete with an Oscar winner, a recent Oscar winner, writing the coattails of that and picking up a paycheck.
Almost immediately after, right?
Immediately. I have a big brain theory about that later, don't let me forget. And it's an adaptation of a classic, beloved piece of adventure literature from the 1800s
that has been made into movies a lot,
countless times. So it is kind of in that reboot. We don't need another one of these machine of just churning out a movie that no one asked for. And it doesn't work. Like, none of it works. It doesn't seem like it was filmed by an actual person. Like, it feels like they just kind of left the camera running and spinning sometimes. It's almost like not a movie. It's almost a to me, it's all of these things that are the digital era of Hollywood and big budget filmmaking just complete into this giant mess, this like monstrosity of a film. And it's just endlessly interesting to me. I never get bored of it.
That's this was made by a literature major, right? Paul Tesoum Institute has a major in literature. And that might be one of the reasons that on the Blu-ray, which you can check out from Oklahoma County Library,
shout out,
he says, you know, I've been always been a fan of the Three Musketeers. This is the first time to have D'Artagnan as 18 years old. Visually, it's very true to the book.
So have either of you read the book?
No. Actually, no, I did. But it's been so long.
And you're a Dumas fan, right?
I'm a big Dumas head. Yeah, as we call ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read the first book a couple years ago, and it's
Dumas Dome.
And it's one of my favorites. It's got everything, and it's like 800 pages of complicated politics and classic adventures and some very serious stuff thrown in. And this movie is basically not the book at all. I don't know if you could tell watching it, but the book has no airships and the movie is basically all airships.
Well, there's two parts of this film which just seem like take some liberties. And that's the first act and the last half. There is a middle section which is close to what I recall from the book and other iterations of screen adaptations.
Yeah, him, Logan Lerman, getting from his farm in like the best like dad sending off a kid to go do better things.
I'm having a moment when Logan Lerman says goodbye to his dad, who has an accent that Logan Lerman does not, and says, go get into trouble in Paris, son. And literally it cuts to a scene of Logan Lerman picking a fight with Mads Mikkelsen,
who in the most badass way ever just shoots him. Yeah, that whole section from the point where they have the three duels, which is a classic funny bit, and then to them meeting with the king and the cardinal or whatever. After that, it pretty much deviates completely from the book. Thomas, okay. I forgot to ask, do you have a 60-second synopsis?
Yeah, it might be just over 60 seconds. We were taking a longer shower at the moment, so let's see. Let's go ahead and time this one out.
All right, 3, 2, 1, go!
Like the original, only better. Amazing intros. There's this moat and someone pops up in like scuba gear and farts because it's really cool. That's Athos. And then there's like a freeze frame. It's like the intro of all the characters in The Crow 4, because then Milady pulls out a gun and you get her title card. And there's a guy like Batman who's a priest, who's Aramis. And finally a guy in chains who's Porthos. There's a scene with statues that blow poisonous darts that have to get through. It's like the laser room in Resident Evil. Mm-hmm. But Milady gets through, but they don't know she's a double agent. And then all this is before D'Artagnan, a country bumpkin, comes into town and picks a fight with the Three Musketeers and sets up duels one after the other. Then the four of them fight Roquefort, who has an eye patch, maybe. And his men show up, and then they're all fighting, and then maybe he kisses Constance because she's in danger, or maybe just because the action makes him hot. A map, and they go to England to get some jewels, and then there's Buckingham. They get the jewels and then fight on an airship, and then maybe steal a different airship, and then Milady jumps to her death to spare Athos the guilt of killing her. They land the airship. Cardinal Richelieu is there, and they attribute the airship as a gift that Richelieu was giving the king. They're all offered jobs, which they turn down because no one wants to work anymore in France. And the words of Bryan Adams, all for one and all for love.
All right, so that was the synopsis of the novel. Can you do the movie now?
Well, this movie opened up with a frogman, not a French person, but a person in scuba gear who has like a dart gun
Oh, it's like two. It's like two of them in his back, kind of like what's her name in Resident Evil.
Ooh, yeah, yeah, like a video game character.
And they never bring it back.
No, like all they have all this crazy steampunk type technology that they never bring back until they actually are on flying airships. But then they're still fighting with like swords and muskets.
Uh huh.
Right. Yeah. The whole like clock punk aesthetic, which is, I believe, how it's described on the Wikipedia, is kind of the only thing I feel Anderson inserts into this film aesthetically that's like his own. And I want to say not terrible, but it's kind of the only thing that sets it apart and makes it more unique than this movie would be otherwise if someone else was directing it.
Well, I'd also say all the practical stuff that they do in addition to the CGI, because they don't rely completely on CGI. There's a lot of, and especially on the behind the scenes on the Blu-ray, you can see a lot of the practical stuff and the set pieces that they design to give depth to and realism to things. It's not just a blue screen with your Marvel heroes running around.
That's right.
Yeah, it is stunning to watch this movie compared to the next one, given the difference in what you just were talking about, Thomas, because you could tell there's a lot of tactile set building that they do in this movie for the set pieces that, you know,
use real swords.
Yeah. And then, the next movie is completely the opposite, it feels like. But this one has, for a portion of its runtime, you know, a real practical effect feel to it that is unusual for 2023.
Jack, you've seen this movie a bunch. It's been many months since I watched it, and I sent you the clips from the DVD or the Blu-ray, which includes like a point counter system during there's a pop-up that you can do throughout it. Whenever there's a fight scene, people get points for how many people they beat up or how cool they are. Is there a point in this movie where somebody pulls out a butterfly knife?
I don't recall.
I'm pretty sure there's a butterfly knife at some point during this movie. Which, okay,
it's an anachronism.
Yeah, I was okay with the flying ships, but once that butterfly knife came out, I was like, ah, come on.
All of it looks like way too clean as well. Like, this is supposed to be Paris in the 1800s, and everyone's like clothes are bright and freshly pressed and steam ironed. Come here.
Sorry, Jack was beating the dog.
I'm about to.
Is that what we call that whenever you guys play Mortal Kombat?
But like the best historical epics totally have the look and feel of what you'd imagine stuff back then to look like Last of the Mohicans, which we've covered on the pod.
Barry Lyndon, which we haven't covered on the pod.
I mean, I think there's a point where they change the line about people making fun of his horse to be closer to Clint Eastwood's. So D'Artagnan rides like a horse in, right? And people make fun of it. And that causes him to get into the duels, but doesn't, like in the book, it's something like people will laugh at a horse who don't dare laugh at the master, I think is the line of the horse, right? But in this, it's like, I don't mind you laughing at me, but my horse's feelings get hurt or something. Uh-huh. It's like close to a Clint Eastwood line.
Clint Eastwood, who we've discussed on the podcast briefly.
Once or twice, yeah. He's not doing too well.
Director of films.
At the time,
he was an actor as well. Yeah.
At the time of this recording, he hasn't been seen in public for over 400 days.
Is that true?
Yeah. I read an article about it yesterday.
That's sad.
Hopefully, between recording this and its release, he doesn't pass away. But
hopefully, he releases a secret movie he's been working on, and it's his masterpiece.
Yeah, he's been filming like 10 minutes of it every year, like Boyhood, since the early 1970s.
Uh-huh.
I hope he maybe sells his vineyard as well so that he can finance this film.
That's Coppola.
Oh.
I have something about Three Musketeers that I think really perfectly encapsulates my feeling about it, which is when I watched it with my mom for the first time, because Annabelle and I just like show this movie to everyone. We make everyone watch it.
It's true.
Because it's amazing. And when Aramis, I think, the priest one, the religious one, when he shows up for the first time, my mom was laughing and she was like, oh, they cast that guy because they couldn't afford Orlando Bloom. And my sister and I look at each other and we just have like this knowing. And I think that perfectly describes what I love about the movie is that Orlando Bloom does show up.
That would be Luke Evans. Is that who that is?
Luke Evans. Yeah.
So he actually, Anderson talks about that moment whenever, Atos shows up as a Catholic Batman or whatever. he says that was inspired by a Catholic man. No. That he was inspired by the video game Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh my God. He plays a lot of video games, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Anderson. Yeah.
He also directs a lot of great movies.
Yeah. As we established last episode, both Boogie Nights and Event Horizon, same year.
Another thing that really captures, I think, a magical moment, a magical feeling, a moment that's magical, whatever, you know what I'm trying to say, in this film is the chess scene. They're playing chess, right? The Cardinal, Christoph Waltz, and then the boyish king, mm-hmm. or they're sitting around a chess table. The camera inexplicably will not stop moving around them in a half circle, and then it cuts to it moving the other direction, and it is such a terribly edited sequence, and it is so jarring and disorienting, and it comes out of nowhere, and I love it every time. My sister and I are always waiting for that, and then we're like, it's a spinning camera. We reference it all the time. I don't know why. I find things like that. Like, Anderson had been directing movies for how long? 20 years?
Just almost about 15?
Yeah. And this movie is like almost incompetently badly directed at times. Seemingly no reason.
We'll get to some of that in the next one.
But the next one I don't think has as compelling of characters and a story as this does.
I agree. I think really it's the level of practical locations and the cast that he got compared to the movie we're going to talk about next.
But here's one of my favorite lines from the commentary. Speaking of practical locations.
Uh-huh.
Yes, the book takes place in Paris, but Bulgaria is also old.
Yes.
Oh, my Lord.
I love it.
Those are both indisputable facts that you're saying, though. Because he's right on both counts.
See, I love this movie in the same way that you love watching a Golan and Globus movie. Like, it gives me that same feeling.
Oh, like, yeah, with, like, late-era Lee Marvin.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, Bulgaria is also old. Like, that is so great. That's perfect.
Wow.
But yeah, the whole like self-indulgent, like we need a James Cameron action sequence to end this movie. I don't know. I've never seen that captured so perfectly before.
But also, the end of the movie, if I remember right, and please help me out because I watched it, 3 months ago. The end of the movie has an end like the end of Mortal Kombat, right?
Yeah. There's a post-credits.
There's a stinger, as they say.
There's ships coming to attack France.
Yeah, it's like it makes no sense because at the end of the movie, she falls in the water, Orlando Bloom's defeated, and then it cuts to her soaking wet on the bridge of a ship. And
who's the she? Like,
Mila Jovovich. And he's like, yeah, I'm going back to France, or I'm going to France, I'm going to Paris. And then it cuts to like an entire fleet of ships, both in the water and in the air. And it's like, where did all that come from? If it was that, available to him, that she is still wet once they fish her out.
Yeah.
Zero sense whatsoever. Just to be like there's going to be another one.
Yeah.
Three Musketeers.
I wish there was. Uh-huh. Three Musketeers Retribution.
Yes.
What's great about that is I never realized until like my fifth or sixth viewing that the plans that they steal at the beginning are for the airships that are built later in the movie. So it's kind of their fault. They got that technology out there. So,
because it was the Da Vinci's vault.
Yeah.
And he set up this vault to protect all of his ideas. Why would he do that? If you were an inventor, wouldn't you want your ideas out there?
And he did want his ideas out there.
Or if you knew about the Catholic, like the truth about the origin of Jesus or something, why would you hide it within all the paintings? I don't know. There's something wrong with this movie.
Genius. There's a couple of them. The Da Vinci Demon and Angels and Codes.
Yeah, they're both great, too.
Yeah, Dan Brown. Dan Brown, if you ever go to a Goodwill, if you went to Goodwill in the early teens of this century, you would find like 400 copies.
If Dan Brown,
why is Dan Brown our listener? Why would you address him?
Dan Brown? No,
he probably knows this. Why are you telling him?
He probably goes to Goodwill now and then, like, pulls one of his books out and then accidentally drops it. And he goes, "Oh, I dropped it." And he looks around and he goes, "Oh, shoot, that's my picture on the back." And then he shows it to, like, the guy who doesn't speak English, who's looking for cowboy boots. And he goes, "Isn't that weird?" And everybody's just ignoring him. And all the people at Goodwill are like, "It's that author again." Dan Brown, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I'm sure you have a full, happy life that does not include accidentally showing people you're a best-selling author at Goodwill.
I'm not sorry.
Or writing good fiction.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, speaking of books, The Three Musketeers as a book, very different from the movie already, I said, but there's like a lot of really serious, surprisingly dark, grim political stuff in the book for the time that is always really surprising reading Dumas, how much he got away with in serialized adventure fiction.
Yeah.
There's a really harrowing moment that I will always remember from that book where Athos just straight up kills Missy, what's her name?
Milady?
Mila Jovovich. He just straight up murders her, like, in cold blood in the book. And he's, like, one of the heroes. And I always thought that was, like, whoa, that's pretty grim for 1800s. And, of course, that doesn't happen in the movie.
Yeah, instead, in the movie, she tears off her skirt and reveals, like, a clock rope thing in order to rappel into... Anyway.
And the camera's from above as she's flipping over people in slow motion. But yeah, the end of this movie with the airship battle and crashing into the buildings over it, like, just the most ridiculous, fake looking, like, terrible green screen, terrible CGI you could possibly imagine. And it just makes me think, like, kind of how my big brain theory with Assault on Wall Street, because I think Anderson and Bol are very similar in a lot of areas. Mm-hmm. Anderson's definitely a better director. That Assault on Wall Street only ends with that big taxi driver action sequence because Bol feels like that's how an American movie needs to end. And I feel like The Three Musketeers is the same way, where it's like, well, Avatar, for example, ends with that great, amazing set piece. And I feel like this is a movie where if you're making like a paint by numbers movie, you'd be like, okay, well, at this point there has to be a giant action sequence that we spend all our money on. And there is, but it's incompetent and out of place and nonsensical. And I love it. That's my galaxy brain theory on Three Musketeers. I don't know if it was intentional or not. That's the other thing. I don't know how much of this is Anderson being meta and trying to break the formula of a movie by making it as formulaic as possible, or if it's just a shitty movie. And either way, it's fantastic.
I kind of feel it's like if you were in your 20s and two people were drinking and one of them had read Three Musketeers and the other one hasn't, and then when they're really drunk, the person who had read it would tell them part of the story, and then they would go, "And then?" And then the person who hadn't and was drunk would say, "And then they steal plans for airships." Okay. And then it.
Improv. And
improv,
then.
Improv. There you go. And then. Thomas, yeah. You know all about improv, right?
Yes. And that's how it's done.
Brilliant.
This whole plot feels like an improv between two drunk people.
Yeah, that's the perfect way of putting it.
Yeah.
And we never really mentioned James Corden as the comedic relief. Just perfect. Like, you've gotten all this together. It's like you're making the perfect anti-movie, but you only need one more ingredient, and it's James Corden as comedic relief, which everyone in 2023 by now knows the rule of thumb. If you're making a movie, is don't put James Corden in your movie.
I would say the robot Polly has sex with in Rocky IV is a better presence in a movie than James Corden is in The Three Musketeers.
Oh my God. Yeah, he is insufferable, bumbling around. He has to sleep on the balcony, and then a pigeon poops on him.
Yeah, this is the level of storytelling where they're like, "Are you gonna sleep on the balcony?" He's like, "On the balcony? Where the birds will shit on me!" And then it literally cuts to him sleeping on the balcony with birds shitting on him.
It's Chekhov's bird poop.
Instead of just saying, okay, and then cutting to the birds pooping on him, which would be funny, we're literally get a payoff of the joke with the very next cut, within seconds.
That That is what I'm saying. That is how you don't write a film. So this is an anti-movie.
Okay, fair enough.
That had to be intentional.
Oh, Blesterfer Jones.
Yeah, the other great thing is, like, they're all the heroes, and, like, he's their underpaid servant, and, like, the joke is how poor he is and how they're not paying him enough. And they're so mean to him. Oh, it's so great.
I don't know if that's funny or not, but
it's hilarious. Thomas, any closing thoughts? Were you glad you finally watched this masterpiece?
I guess it gave me insight into your brain a little bit. And yeah, it has me, before I rush out and I watch the next film that you recommend, it does have me give a little bit of pause.
I could recommend you a couple bowl flicks if you'd like.
We're well past that. You have Google reviews for this movie?
Do I ever? I actually don't know if I do. Yeah, I have some Letterboxd. Cat on Letterboxd gives Three Musketeers 3 stars out of 5 and says, this is 100% historically accurate in my mind. Abby gives it 3 stars and says, really appreciate this movie's anti-James Corden agenda.
Nice.
Drew Edelstein gives it 2.5 and says, can't believe people call Marriage Story a drama when the Three Musketeers 2011 exists.
Mm.
I haven't seen Marriage Story, so I don't, do they have airships in that one?
I have one. Google review from influencer.com shopper. Such a great product. Highly recommend. The quality is great. I will definitely be purchasing again. I wouldn't change a thing about this product. I was very happy. And it's very affordable for everyone.
Perfect. Agreed. Before we take a quick break, I need to share with you guys my galaxy brain theory, another one, on how this movie influenced Django Unchained. You've heard this before. I don't know if you remember. So, Thomas, you've seen Django Unchained, right?
I have.
You remember one of Calvin Candy's slaves at Candyland was named D'Argentan or whatever, after the Three Musketeers protagonist.
Okay.
And one of the things in that movie is Christoph Waltz's character hating everything about Calvin Candy appropriating French culture.
Uh-huh.
And he has this little bit of business where every time someone says D'Argentan, he corrects their pronunciation of the name.
D'Artagnan.
Yeah. It's actually like D'Artagnan or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that makes him angry in that movie and leads to the big shootout and whatever. And at the end, when Django comes back and he kills the slavers, he shoots them. He says, this is for D'Artagnan. And he pronounces the name correctly. So my theory is, because everyone is mispronouncing it in 2011's Three Musketeers, Christoph Waltz, who is probably filming Django around the same time, complained to Tarantino about that, the mispronunciation of that French name in an American film. And so Tarantino wrote it into Django.
Wow.
Do you think there's a beef between Tarantino and Anderson?
I think after that, there might be. Hey, wow. Chris, say what you will, but Christoph Waltz never worked with Anderson again, so.
That's true.
Anyway, that just kind of blew my mind watching those two movies around the same time and realizing that that's my conspiracy, how all the puzzle pieces fit together.
Wow.
Because I believe in the original script, I believe that wasn't in the original script for Django, that bit of business. So anyway, there's some fun trivia for you.
Yeah. And then there's that scene in Three Musketeers where they're in a bar and he's like, D'Artagnan, the D is silent. Totally happens. Wow, that was 40 minutes of Three Musketeers. Do you want to take a break or do you want to power through to the other side?
I need a break, but you guys keep going.
All right. We're gonna fold space.
You can keep
like they
riffing.
Did in Event Horizon. Hey, Jack, bring me a glass of water. Thanks. Oh, that sounds good. What are you drinking there?
Water. The tap. My wife doesn't really like it.
Here's a list of stuff I would love to do more of. Outer space, sci-fi, underwater, book illustrations. Oh, wow. Comic book illustrations. Fantasy paintings by Frank Frazetta. Is he talking about the side of Vans or tattoos? Do you have any tattoos, Thomas?
Yes.
Okay. Are you going to share what it is?
No.
Okay. Oh, are they like John Wick's tattoos?
John Wick has tattoos?
Yeah, he has those tattoos on his back. Or those just could be really elaborate bruises from all the falling he does.
Oh, yeah, I think he has some from his family. No, I have a tattoo of the guy from Fantasy Island on my back.
Uh-huh.
The character.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Rourke.
Yeah, sure. if I get a tattoo of tattoo getting Mr. Rourke tattooed on his arm, that'd be pretty amazing.
I think it'd be better if you got a tattoo of tattoo getting a tattoo of you on his arm.
Ooh, wow.
It'd be like an infinity tattoo. That'd be great.
Done.
I wonder if Jack will get a tattoo in Europe.
I got my ear pierced in Europe.
Which one?
The right one?
Which one's that?
I think he meant which Europe.
Oh.
Oh. The one that's west of Asia.
Ryan needs to really stop texting us about Skarsgårds. Obviously, Stellan Skarsgård is the best Skarsgård because he's the original.
Mm. Oh, I have him on mute.
I kind of like Alexander the best.
Stellan's a little more pervy than Alexander. I think that's why he's my preference, because you just never know what he's going to be capable of. Alexander,
Thomas, did you see the Infinity Poo?
It's streaming right now. I can watch it for free.
What are you talking about?
The Infinity Poo by Brandy Crones.
Brandy Crones is my favorite country western band.
Infinity Pool with Alexander Skarsgård.
Oh, no. That's the Cronenberg movie?
Yeah.
Brandy Crones.
No. Wow. Infinity Poo by the guy who has Crones. Okay.
Oh boy.
Sounds terrible.
It's terrible.
I had a roommate that had Crohn's. It was terrible for him.
Oh, that's a good segue to Resident Evil Retribution. This would be the second of a trilogy of films to end the Resident Evil series that Anderson started with the first one and wrote and produced the second and third one. Yeah. So he made Three Musketeers, Resident Evil Retribution, and then Pompeii.
Which is unwatchable.
And then he would make Resident Evil The Final Chapter, during which time they were making it, the producer was literally already talking to people about a quote-unquote reboot.
Jesus.
Which, if it comes out within a couple years of the last one, that's not a reboot. That's, what is that?
Giving up? DC?
Yes. this movie is, it's garbage, and I don't know how much energy I'm going to have to talk about it.
Well, 12 extras were hospitalized with neck, leg, and back wounds after falling from a collapsing high-wheel platform.
Oh, my God.
That had a Hummer on it or something? Is that the one?
I could not tell you. So, it might come out during my one-minute review, but these films all kind of blur together.
Because you watched all the Resident Evils for this, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
All six of them?
Yes, all six of them, in order.
Why?
Because I wanted to be well-versed.
Why? Because you didn't have to do all that.
No, I thought, you know, Annabelle's leaving soon, and we should give her a proper send-off, and I should watch all the Resident Evil movies.
I don't understand how you watch all six of those, but you couldn't watch all five Twilight movies.
Yeah, Twilight's way better.
Perhaps, uh-oh. But I'm a completist, and in 2012, there was also movies that we've covered called Zero Dark Thirty, woo! Spring Breakers,
Boo.
And Lincoln.
Boo.
Wow.
Bad year.
Not the best year.
This might be the worst year for podcast movies.
Wow.
All four of these are awful.
Was good, as was Spring Breakers.
They were both terrible.
I miss Spring Breakers because of surgery. It's possible that I died on the table. This is just a bizarre afterlife where versions of me keep reappearing to resurrect actors whose characters died in earlier
versions. You would hope that if you died on the table, though, you would have like one last big number, like a big Fosse number, right?
Oh, when you said number, I thought you meant number two. That happens after you die, though.
Yeah, that happens. Anyway, Thomas, do you have 60 seconds to do a – do you have a 60
we'll see
second
if this thing? Lasts 60 seconds or not. So, okay, so we watch all of them in January. Okay.
Go, 3, 2, 1, go.
We don't think this is the one that opens Japan with an umbrella and snipers, but the one that has the ship attack in reverse?
Yes.
So we watch the preview. Oh, yeah. And one of her clones has a daughter who's hard of hearing, and she's living in the suburbs, and there's this infection that breaks out, and then people have the face mutation proboscis thing from the previous P.W. Anderson films. It was in the first three. Oh, and there's probably a 15% chance that bacon dogs come back, and maybe the burlap sack guy with the sign and axe is in this one. Umbrella Corporation is definitely running simulations, though, to fight the virus. There's a 10% chance the next movie is where there's a bunch of her attacking the compound, all of her clones all at once, or maybe it's this one. There might also be fast zombie people an Enderling is trying to take on. There's probably a laser wall, but maybe not. She could be shooting people that turns into coins, or she shoots coins and people might explode into coins. I don't think she has her psychic powers again in this one, but she has in a previous movie, or maybe one of her clones does. Either Michelle Rodriguez and others from the first film are probably back in this one. And I don't think this is the one with Alaska, but there might be a ditch full of Alice's at some point.
Minute 14, not bad.
Okay.
And I texted you guys this earlier, and then yeah, I did a cursory look on the internet and found out that I'm way behind, that this is already a thing. But when she is flashing to like one of her clones as like a mom with a daughter, and she has kind of the blonde hair with bangs, I was like, holy shit, she looks exactly like Taylor Swift.
Whoa, yeah.
And then this morning I was looking it up, and I just typed in Mila Jovovich and then the letter T, and immediately Taylor Swift came up. And then there's a whole bunch of people with photo comparisons of the two of them.
And they do look quite similar.
They do, especially when she has lighter hair like she does in Three Musketeers and one of her clones in this movie.
That's right.
I hope Taylor Swift starts doing action films.
I hope they could.
She's already in Amsterdam.
They could redo the entire Resident Evil series with Mila Jovovich, but it could be like Resident Evil Taylor's version.
Or they could do like it because she has so many clones. They could do like Linda Hamilton and her twin in Terminator 2. Or if they need like a mirror scene.
Oh, yeah.
They just have Taylor Swift and Mila Jovovich.
Yeah, that's a good idea. They could totally do that.
So, Thomas, I know you don't remember this movie strikingly well. It didn't make too big of an impression on you, I guess, amongst the other five. But the reason we wanted to pick this one is on Letterboxd, this has the highest ratings of any of them. All the reviews are rave, and that this is some sort of deconstruction of the franchise, and that it's some sort of brilliant revisionist take on the first three films, and it's some sort of technological reevaluation of ourselves and what it means to be human in the digital age. Is that actually true, or is that just bullshit by fans?
You know, yes.
Okay.
No, 100% something.
I was really excited about this for that reason. I was like, okay, like I think Three Musketeers is like a brilliant reevaluation of digital filmmaking. And I was disappointed.
Well, did you see the previous four films?
No.
Okay.
I saw the first one.
Something that's really interesting. I had only seen the first one prior to watching all six. And what's interesting about this film is that maybe we were talking about John Wick 4 earlier before we started recording, and how in John Wick 4, everybody has a bulletproof suit. And so therefore it's like you've leveled up on the video game and now you have to shoot people a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is something that Anderson understands in these films and uses. So Alice wasn't a character of the original Resident Evil franchise. He created her. And that's part of that potentially going over to make a zombie film in case it didn't pan out. Huh. So what slowly happens through the series is you start to introduce monsters that are part of the Umbrella Corporation and part of the series, the video games, which I haven't played much of. I found them to be extremely hard, and I gave up. going back to playing Tetris. But what's interesting about this film is it does open up backwards, which is phenomenal, right? It looks great. But also, everything that you've kind of seen in the films before, if it's all a simulation, and they're trying to figure out how to like fight this virus in simulated cities, or like rerun the simulation in different cities for like how it broke out, it is like we're all living in a simulation, and it is like we're all living in a video game at that point.
Hmm.
And so it's an interesting way. It's an interesting way, like five movies into a series, to not completely reboot it and not completely dismiss what came before, like the psychic powers, to constantly just pick and choose, like you're retconning in a comic book. You don't want to go and like bring everything back, all of history back. You just kind of bring your own take to it. It almost feels like the films are amnesiatic between themselves. And it helps that the main character, Alice, has amnesia.
That kind of makes sense. It doesn't work though.
No, and last week we talked about the acting of people who had never acted before the first time he yelled action. This movie is filled with people. The whole team that she has that is coming to rescue her with a ticking time clock, and
they're like the team in MacGruber that he recruits.
Yes, the team in MacGruber that all gathers in the van and gets blown up. Yeah, and one guy with the guy that looks like a model with the model hair.
Yeah.
I kept thinking he was CGI, like the broadcast that she gets from the dude with the sunglasses.
Oh, yeah.
Because he doesn't look like a real person. And when he acts, it doesn't really look like it's a human speaking.
Yeah.
Very uncanny valley.
Act is a very loose term with this film.
Yes. One of the worst acted movies we've seen since Uwe Boll series last year.
Yeah. I will agree with one of your points, Thomas, that the opening sequence is incredible. And I was so on board. I was like, this is going to be visually inventive throughout. And that was about it. Kind of gave up after that opening. Thought of a cool opening.
Nothing about it really makes a whole lot of sense. And then, you know, conceptually, if you're talking about what Thomas is talking about, where it's kind of a soft reboot retcon, like you would find in a comic book that had been going on for years and years. I mean, you talk about that, and you talk about the simulation bases and sets underwater. It's kind of a cool idea. I mean, if you're writing it down, it sounds kind of cool.
It does.
And each one has kind of a different city in it. It sounds like it could be pretty cool if you were to tell someone the story. In execution, I'm all for it with this movie.
I was pretty much on board up until, like, I was giving it the benefit of the doubt up until she meets Red Dress Lady. And then there's that exposition dump with the CGI guy on the screen. And then after that, it just felt like, the big guys with the axes were cool. Like, I thought that was a really well put together sequence. But besides that, I didn't like anything.
Oh, you know what?
I'm
going to have to agree with you on that. The big guy with axes was actually pretty cool.
They're like destroying cars and stuff, and the axes were big. And
gives Mila Jovovich the 14th or 15th opportunity to slot limbo under something, which seems to be her patented move, much like Jean-Claude Van Damme in his splits. Jovovich is sliding on her knees underneath something that could possibly cut her in half.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah,
but then like she finds a daughter who, are these real people? Are they they're clones?
But she becomes the mom like Sigourney Weaver in Aliens, and then because it the first time we're introduced, the dad says, "Oh, make sure you use your words when you're signing." And by the end of the movie, she's just basically talking.
That's true. And this by the end of this movie, oh my god, there's an ending to this film, and then we were checking the clock because you know it's Resident Evil Retributions or whatever, and as the film, it has to be over. They've escaped. The facility's destroyed. They're in the car. There's 25 fucking minutes left. It is so insufferable.
And then they have a terrible set where a submarine interrupts their drive across the frozen ocean that they just escaped from an underground old Soviet whatever. And then Iron Lady, who is basically a lady in a catsuit zipped down with a glowing beetle on her chest.
Yeah.
That controls her mind.
Does that make sense to you?
And they have a protracted fight scene, and then it turns out all she needed was someone just to grab it and throw it on the ground and shoot it.
So dumb. Was that from a previous movie, like the Red Beetle thing?
Okay. Yeah, the fourth movie, I think that they go up to Alaska because they're told that it's this paradise, and that's the one where you have a ditch full of Alice's. And they go up there, and there's the Red Beetle thing, which is new all of a sudden, like new rules. There's Red Beetles, and they mind control people. And that's they ended up at the end of that on the ship. So the ship that you open with
is
the previous that ends like a Paul Thomas, I'm sorry, a P.W.S. Anderson film with being attacked. Like, oh no, something bad's going to happen. There's the Emperor. He's like 80 feet tall. And then all the Mortal Kombat people have to face off against him. Or there's the Flotillion and the airships coming to attack France. And that's the fourth one ends. But then actually picks up. It picks up in reverse. Which, if you have a tendency to accidentally put your DVD player on random, does seem like it's possible, but it's also running backwards.
I guess I don't understand the mind control. It's controlling her mind, but it's on her chest, just giving us an excuse to have her cat suit zipped up. If she just zipped over it, that would be fine.
Get the beetle.
Yeah. It would cover up the beetle. Why does she have her one weakness
exposed?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
I mean, it's a terrible movie and it's a stupid question for something, and then nobody ever thinks like she finally figures out, just like, pulls it out.
It's not attached to anything. Yeah.
It's like the stick thing that looks like a piece of corn on the cob that you put on each end of the corn of the cob to.
It's like when Rick Douglas throws the fire extinguisher at Liz's head and then she's fine.
Oh, dark place.
Yeah, this is by far the worst of the four, and it didn't make me feel bad for him because the dude is making movies. He's married to Mila Jovovich. I'm not going to feel sorry for him. But creatively, for like the 90s, how excited he was to make movies, and you could feel it like in Mortal Kombat, as ridiculous as it was, and Event Horizon, which I quite liked, that he's just pretty much just making a movie in order to make a movie, and like Clint Eastwood making Bronco Billy just to keep all his friends employed.
Right.
Yeah, this is kind of sad. And keeping his wife employed.
Don't compare any decent film with Bronco Billy, please.
I was comparing this movie to Bronco Billy. Bronco Billy's a million times better.
No.
I'm going to fight you, Thomas.
Well, watch out for my slow-mo flip over your head. Did she shoot things and they turn into coins? Blew my fucking mind. He said, four movies without any of that. There are no, like, you shoot things and they have blood, right? Or they get blowed up.
CGI blood.
Yeah. To turn things into video game coins, amazing. It really is. I wish the Super Mario Brothers movie that's coming out was live action.
That would be so great.
And I almost feel like of all the people who are using AI technology with that ChatGPT, whatever it is, that someone like Paul Thomas Anderson, who has essentially been making AI versions of these Resident Evil things, like it's the same, but just add a few different things, that he's probably going to benefit the most from this.
You said Paul Thomas Anderson. Oh. I know it's easy to get them confused because they're both such great influential filmmakers.
I just call him WS. Let's call him WS.
I do too. I started that. It's my nickname for him. We're good friends.
Yeah.
He directed Monster Hunter, which is his most recent film, which is also a video game adaptation, also starring his wife. But as of August 2022, his last director, Paul W.S. Anderson, teases his next film, In Lost Lands. Which will star Mila Jovovich and Dave Bautista.
And who?
Dave Bautista.
Oh.
Who's great. So that might happen.
Yeah. A sorceress travels to the Lost Lands in search of a magical power that allows a person to transform into a werewolf. A sorceress travels to the Lost Lands in search of a magical power that allows a person to transform into a werewolf. That is the repeated description.
What?
I guess they heard our theme song a couple weeks ago where we repeated that twice, and they said, you know what? We don't have enough characters to fill out this long one, so we're just going to replace have one sentence repeated. That's on IMDb.
Oh my god.
Was this the one that's an adaptation of a George R. R. Martin short story?
Ooh, is it?
A Sorceress and Werewolves?
You ever do werewolves?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is.
So they've already filmed it. It's in post-production. Yeah.
Is it?
Holy shit. Oh, yeah. So based on a story by George R. R. Martin. So
he's going to be
branching
awesome.
Off from video games.
Well, good. And he's working with his wife still.
Yeah, that's kind of sweet. Maybe they probably have their three daughters there, and it's probably just a big happy family. I'm okay with that.
Didn't one of their daughters show up in this film? Was she the gal who's hard of hearing?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure one of their daughters shows up in one of their films, and I can't remember if it's this one or one of the ones where fewer people were injured.
Yeah, they didn't get married until the late 2000s because they were on and off. So I think their first daughter would be a little too young to play the deaf girl, Taylor Swift's daughter.
Here's a letterboxed for In Lost Lands already. Anouk says, a Dutch website with film news said that this film was to be directed by Wes Anderson. But of course, that was a mistake. Just so we're clear, not Wes Anderson, not Paul Thomas Anderson.
Just to be clear, I think I have seen more W.S. Anderson movies than Wes Anderson movies. I'm sorry.
Could you imagine if the W stood for Wes and it was just his doing both this entire time with the costume change?
Oh, man. Yeah, he has like two closets. One just like t-shirts and jeans, regular director guy. And then he has an accent. And then his
the other one's
like is full
yellow
like,
and has black and white photos of Paul McCartney.
Bow ties. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bow ties. That's what
you
I think.
You could get
the
makeup
Anderson.
Crew who did Scott Adson's fat suit in John Wick 4 to make him look like a different person.
What a misstep.
Wow. Okay. So this is, we've watched a bunch of, and it sounds like I might have watched even more Paul W.S. Anderson's film. The theme I hear recurring is nonsense. Yeah, I have it here on the frequency of everything we've been saying. And but Jack, you're probably the closest to this director. Did you find anything new upon rewatching his masterpieces?
He definitely has a strange, anachronistic view of technology. I'm not sure exactly. I don't think it's like technological fear, obsession like Michael Bay has with it, but there's definitely like a brilliant moment in Mortal Kombat where they're all waiting on a modern day pier with modern day ships and they all have suitcases and whatever, and then a like ancient mystical boat comes out of the fog and it's just totally out of place. Yeah, all of his movies have some sort of element of that, and it's sort of new technology as some sort of mystical creative force that you can really do anything with in a film. And he does a lot of interesting stuff with it, and a lot of terrible stuff. Besides that, I don't know what the guy's fucking deal is. This is probably the director that I've seen the most movies of that like I have no idea about his views on
anything.
Like, I just can't really figure it out, but he's a mystery wrapped in an enigma, and that's why I love him.
Well, okay. I'd add to that, though, maybe Ford has something this week to help with these two films. So our previous director, we bring in to help punch up the works of our current director. And the previous person we did was John Ford.
Yeah. John Ford would improve the Three Musketeers.
Can't be improved.
Gosh, I don't know.
Yeah. Yes. So maybe whenever D'Artagnan's with his dad and before that big, that lovely send off, probably the best send off in all times of any father to a son leaving for France.
Until tomorrow.
Maybe prior to that, when they're out, like I'm in the idyllic French countryside, airship tractors come in and start tearing up the land. And his dad tells him, you go to the big city and, maybe you find who the bank who owns this land, who's behind the person in the tractors, who's behind the banks, and that was your king, and you seek revenge.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, he's a little good. Tom Joad going off.
Or you could have James Stewart is one of the her husband in the flashback in Resident Evil, and goes like, now, those zombies are moving kind of fast now. They're supposed to be slow.
Oh my god.
Could you imagine if he tries to teach them democracy?
In Three Musketeers.
Oh, I guess that's actually the great as well, right?
Oh, now, now I'm the mark. Oh, that's the worst James Stewart impersonation ever.
I see. I hate Margaret Thatcher. I love the James Stewart.
Okay.
Actually, I was thinking in the Retribution. Alice, you know, she's shooting people and they turn into coins and she's picking up those coins and she goes out on the town with everybody else. And they're like, where'd you get that money from? But she has like a little sidekick, maybe her deaf daughter. And she's like, oh, you're the queen, mom, you're the queen. And they end up getting Irish drunk. So they have to stand trial for their crimes.
Because the zombies kill everybody, almost everybody else. That's the reason the zombies took over, is because Alice got all those coins and spent it on drink.
Yeah.
Yes.
Instead of coming to America. She could have just come to America for $10, whatever it was, in The Informant.
What do you got?
I don't have reviews for this one. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Are you guys, you're pretty steeped in Paul W.S. Anderson. Are you guys ready for the quiz?
I'm ready for some W.S. quizzing.
All right. Remember, all of these answers are either correct or incorrect. You don't have to answer. Okay. Let's go with the easy one first. What does the W.S. stand for? A, Worcestershire sauce. B, Wallace Shawn. C, the Wilhelm scream. Or D, Earl Henry Hammer Jr., creator of the Waltons and Falcon Crest. What did W.S. say on his first date with Mila Jovovich that endeared her to him immediately? A, you were brilliant in The Messenger, the story of Joan of Arc, directed by your ex-husband Luc Besson. B, you were perfect in Dazed and Confused, co-starring your ex-husband Sean Andrews. C, you are a living icon to a generation of fans from your role in The Fifth Element and also perfume ads. Or D, I'll have the classic I'll have the classic beef and cheddar with extra cheddar peas. We're at Arby's. David Webb Peoples, whose script Soldier is said to have been butchered by W.S. in 1998, saw his script as a spiritual sequel or sidequel to which famous film? A, Blade Runner. B, Unforgiven. C, Leviathan. Or D, Air Bud. W.S.'s 2008 Death Race inspired a number of direct-to-video sequels, which are actual sequel titles. A, Death Race Inferno. B, Death Race 2, Death Races. C, Death Race 4, Beyond Anarchy. Or D, Death Race to the Bathroom. I just ate three nacho cheese Doritos Locos tacos at a participating Taco Bell. Okay, as a small boy, W.S. loved the Three Musketeers novel and dreamed of making a movie of it in his entire career. What were his stunning comments about his version at a 2011 Comic-Con panel about writing the film and future plans? A, this is only the beginning for the dumbass verse. Dumas. B, James Corden is the real fourth musketeer and is my new muse. Mila can't compare as either actor or singer. C, I had a Ouija board I'd ask guidance from Joss Whedon with when needing quips. When I finished writing, I learned Whedon was still alive, and now I don't know who helped me write the script. Or D, does anyone in the audience have an Abba Zabba, my favorite chewy taffy candy bar with a safe peanut butter center? I don't care about my peanut allergy. I will literally die for an Abba Zabba. At which point he stood, tore off his shirt, and ran around on all four, threatening to sniff everyone's pocket for an Abba Zabba bar. When he couldn't Tyan, stop laughing, man. When he couldn't find stop laughing. All right. When he couldn't find one, went next door to cut this out. Oh my god, you're making me laugh. Okay, when he couldn't find one, he went next door to the Avengers Age of Ultron panel and screamed that the Joss Whedon on stage was not the real Joss Whedon.
Stop.
But an imposter. And he would prove it in a fight to the death in the sea level of the parking garage, where he and Mila enjoyed safe and secure free parking as panel participants. When Joss Whedon said, that just happened, the audience roared with laughter and then taunted WS by eating Abba Zaba bars in front of him and not sharing. WS has never recovered from this indignity. All right.
Probably B. Can I guess B?
WS on the biggest differences between he and the works of Paul Thomas Anderson. A, I have a hotter wife, but other than that, indistinguishable. B, I have standards. I would never stoop to working with Adam Sandler. C, he doesn't have enough flips in his fight scenes. Or C, D, Phantom Thread was better as a video game, and he missed the point of Capcom's classic first-person shooter. Mm. All right, and the last one. What was one of the controversial scenes cut from WS's original cut of Event Horizon? A, more gore. B, porn actors hired to make the torture sex scenes more realistic. C, an extended comedy sequence where Cooper has a bad taste of space nuts, which is when zero gravity stretches out the testicles. Or D, the terrifying visions of the Event Horizon crew being tortured include sounds of Christopher Lambert laughing. Oh, brother. You're going to have to edit out all the laughing from the Comic-Con one. Oh, brother.
Oh, my God. I actually thought I was going to throw up for a second.
What's that?
I actually thought I was going to like vomit from laughing too hard.
You might have space nuts in that case.
Oh, my God.
And if the show notes will have the actual answers if you played at home and you were answering as we went along.
And now you can CGI fire burn your trivia cards.
There you go. Whew. All right. Well, Jack, it's been real, man.
Yeah. Yep. It's always been fun, but it's been real.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's been lots of good times, like when we lost all of my recording from the Point Break episode, and I had just seamlessly re-record dialogue, and no one noticed a thing. Oh my God.
Oh man, you're killing me.
Yeah.
But Jack will still be around, like Tom Joad. He'll be editing the podcast from
wherever
Europe.
There's subpar audio quality.
Awkward pauses, I'll be there.
Wherever someone didn't watch the movie this week, I'll be there.
Uh-huh. Tangents about other movies.
Dogs barking naps. In the background.
Yeah.
Oh, Lordy.
Well, we have more of these. So next week we will be starting a new director with Eric, right?
Sergio Martino. We will be watching, I think, four giallos. I think most of them have Luigi Finesse in them.
Woo!
So sorry you're missing out on those, Jack.
Well, keep me in the loop on that. Keep me in the chat or whatever, because I'll watch the movies still so that I don't get them spoiled when I'm editing.
Okay. I have the titles. I just need to figure out which one came out first so we know what we're doing.
Cool.
Next episode. As always, thanks to the Weird AI for the theme song. That would be Ryan, who was in our first season premiere, both our first two season premieres this season, for Catherine Bigelow.
Ryan, who has the correct opinion on the film Children of Men.
Huh.
Masterpiece?
Yeah.
Yes. You can cut that tangent out of other movie I just talked about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't care.
Yeah. So it won't be the same without you, buddy. Probably won't be as funny either.
Yeah, it'll probably be a lot worse.
Yeah. Episodes will be shorter, that's for sure.
I don't know what that's supposed to mean.
Yeah. Well, good luck in France.
Thanks. I'll try not to get into three duels as soon as I get there.
Yeah, don't pick a fight with Mads Mikkelsen.
I'll try to get shot with a pistol, an old style musket right away. Yeah. I don't know, those riots are getting pretty crazy.
Yeah, Jack will be like in Paris and they'll be like protesting. And I'll be like, what's everybody protesting? They have raised the retirement age. And you'll be like, you mean older than 65?
You guys get to retire?
Yeah. And then they'll say 65, no, to 62. And then they'll
be they're Italian now as well.
And also 62 in French, isn't it like, don't you have to be like 6 tens and then a two? Or it's like they have a long, complicated way of saying it, like 2 plus 6 of 10, I think.
That's when you're getting to 40. But we'll teach you all you need to know about French in the next 12 hours, Explain.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next week with some Giallo director stuff.
Bye, one Jack. For one. One too many 4x4s. Bye, Jack.
Bye.
Bye. No.
I know.